afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, September 10th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Monday, Melody.
Yes, and, you know, it's, I hope we can say it's a happy Thursday and a happy Friday, too, as all eyes are watching this hurricane that is, that grew to a category four, and her name is Florence. And so Florence is just churning away, and we were talking about it prior to hooking up to the program today. And it is, you know, so far we have the, where I'm located at, it is south of us. We're not in any of the, they don't have us in any colored area except maybe for some rain. And the weather man, Jim Cantore from the Weather Channel, he's in Ocean City. So I'm thinking if they're sending Jim Cantore to Ocean City, Maryland, that perhaps, you know, we might stay out of the direct threat. But folks, please take heed. I have lots of listeners in that area, all along the eastern coast, South Carolina. The governor gave the word to evacuate the whole coastline of South Carolina. That's, I don't know the how many miles is included in that, and you know what type of, you know what that would do to commerce and so forth. But I don't know when they're starting the evacuations. I would have to think that as large of an area it is, they'd have to start immediately or shortly thereafter. You know, because I guess this hurricane is supposed to come in Thursday evening, I believe. That it's supposed to come in Wednesday night or Thursday night. I haven't been able to follow it 100%. But and major rainfall inland also, you know, and it's supposed to curve up to Pennsylvania, where you're at, Dave. And I don't know if they gave any forecasts as far as what you're kind of central PA, are you not?
Well, yeah, south, central, southeast, nothing right now, nothing definitive. I've read where, you know, close to where it comes ashore, the current models project up to as much as 30 inches of rain over a few day period. That's catastrophic levels, particularly along the shorelines with sustained heavy winds. But right now we're just waiting to see how things evolve as the week moves on.
Well, I guess it's supposed to Thursday is the day it's supposed to, you know, come ashore. And you know, what's disturbing is here where I'm at, you just really don't know what to do because it says, oh, it's South Carolina or north. Well, you know, okay. That's a, you know.
It's the beauty with forecasts.
Jeez Louise.
Weather forecasts in particular.
Well, let me go ahead and see what I can forecast for gold. I don't think anybody's been really spot on gold because we all know that the price is supposed to be trading much, much higher. But we had a little pressure on gold today. It was down $1.10 after being up today, trying again to beat that 1,200 level, $1,196. Silver was down a penny at $14.26. Platinum was up $4, the only precious metal that was positive today at $789, with palladium down $2 at $984. And we saw the USDX today was weaker by 0.24 at 95.17. Crude oil was down 24 cents at 67.51. And the paper markets today didn't do much. You had the Dow down 60 points, 25,857. NASDAQ was up 21 points at 7,924. The S&P was up 5 at 2,877. 10-year yield, 2.94%, down 0.1%. €1.16, then that was up 0.29. There's a little bit of grain territory in the European markets. Japan, you know, just barely. But Hong Kong continues to probably reacting to those emerging markets, and that was down 1.33%. And it was kind of a, you know, all eyes are focused on this hurricane. There's a lot going on, but yet it seems like it was a slow news day. It's hard to believe that we actually have a slow news day anymore. But you have, there's a little more pressure on Bitcoin. That was down another 1.25% at 62.91. I thought that, you know, again, there's, we talked, Dave, about things are global before we go in and we start talking about, the trade war and so forth. We talk about how the world has been synchronized and, you know, the debt's been synchronized, the stimulus has been synchronized. And I saw a headline today that the pension crisis is bigger than the world's 20 largest economies. And so, of course it's talking about this here, but again, it's just showing how, you know, it's just not here that there's problems. I mean, there's pension funds around the world that simply don't have enough assets to cover the retirement obligations that they owe to millions of workers. So it's just not here. We have a tendency to talk about the U.S. So what happens when one of those other world retirement accounts, pension accounts, default? How does that filter down? Because they all have treasuries in there. They all have stocks in there. They all have, you know, things that are all connected. And here's just another 2x4 flying through the air. And it could be the first domino. We don't know what that first domino is. You know, we talk about the emerging markets and we talk about the strength in the dollar and how it's hurting so many of these other countries, and their currencies are just dropping out of bed, just falling, free fall. I don't know if they're in free fall, but they're significantly down when you're talking about 40% on the year, 50% on the year. There's even some that's 80% on the year to the negative territory. So that does have an impact. So how long does it take until it actually begins to filter through to people say, wow, didn't know. Wow, look at that. How am I impacted by this? And all of a sudden they start seeing, adjustments, and the stock market and everything else just catches up to what we already know is coming. So, and, you know, Dave, everything is, you know, trade, tariffs. And, you know, I mean, we still don't know how long this is. You know, we talk about how the, you know, trade war continues to escalate, you know, that it might be hurting China's economy. And, and we know, I guess it was last week that President Trump had doubled down on his threats. And so far that I know, Dave, these are just threats. Am I correct?
Yep. He's talked about, you know, an additional $267 billion of tariffs on Friday that he's willing to impose on short notice, you know, if the Chinese don't step it up on their end of, negotiating a peaceful settlement.
Well, so, you know, we'll just have to see. I know a former People's Bank of China governor said that while economists see the immediate impact of trade tension as limited, the effect on economic confidence may be larger. This was being warned by that governor of the People's Bank of China, former governor. So there was trade data for August that was released Saturday, and of course that echoed both the cause and the effect of the standoff with the U.S. The surplus with the U.S. rose to a record while overall export growth slowed. Dave?
Yeah, it's hard to say where this is going, much less where it will end. 60 Minutes had an interesting episode on last evening. I believe it was 60 Minutes about some smaller farmers in Wisconsin. This one happened to be a dairy farmer who had mentioned that four or five of his surrounding neighbors who owned large family farms had all, you know, given up. That, you know, they were struggling over the past several years anyway, but you know, the new trade war, this particular farmer blamed it on the trade war that's you know, slowly ratcheting up as we speak. But you know, there's probably a whole bunch of different reasons why farmers in that part of our country are having problems. But you know, China surely you know, is beginning to feel some pain, although you know, their own officials saying right now you know, that they certainly have the wherewithal and that the effects of the U.S. tariffs and the more recent threats are not having too big of an impact. The Ministry of Finance over there said it's going to raise export rebate rates for almost 400 goods, ranging from lubricants to children's books. And that means that firms shipping such products abroad are going to pay less value-added tax. That's their sales, a sales tax. And now these new rates are going to be effective September 15th, the ministry said in its on its website.
You know, you mentioned about the dairy farms in Wisconsin, and my cousin's husband up in the border, close to New York border, Pennsylvania border, and they're having a really hard time. And we were talking about it just a couple of weeks ago about how these small dairy farms, and he's not sure how secure his position is going to be. And he made a comment, and I did some follow-up on it, and but I didn't do all that I wanted to do. But he was talking to me about how Walmart had moved into the dairy business up there in Wisconsin, and that's where you were talking about, right? That they were interviewing these the farmers in Wisconsin. Now, I know Wisconsin's a big state, so I don't know exactly where Walmart has, you know, its farms and so forth. But you know, hey, you have these small farms. I mean, they're just less efficient, and now you have a Walmart dairy farm that moves in there, and you know, with the money to get the best milking equipment, to get the best feeding equipment, and certainly gives it an advantage. So so it kind of makes you there's been and this goes back, I think they moved up to Wisconsin last year, but we've seen a lot of dairy farms going out of business in Wisconsin. We're just not sure. And I think there was also some sort of a trade, because I think a lot of those Wisconsin farms actually ship milk, some type of a milk, up to Canada. So I don't know if, you know, with what's going on with, you know, the relationship with Canada, if that has anything to do with it. But I would think that was that Walmart. Now, Walmart went up there to naturally provide milk for, you know, their stores and everything. But, hey. You know, Walmart did it to all these other little mom and pop shops across this country. You know, they moved in the, you know, the big stores, and, you know, knocks mom and pop right out of business because they can't compete. So,
yeah, if the big box stores like Walmart in particular were more committed to buying from local dairy farmers, I mean, it'd be a different story.
Yeah.
But as we know, that's largely not the case.
Right. So I don't know if that also has a major impact. That and it's interesting, I don't hear very many people talking about that. You know, right away they're going to blame the tariffs and so forth. But, you know, are there other underlying reasons for, you know, so many of them going out of business? You know, here's an interesting topic. It's the cost of U.S. wars now exceed $1.5 trillion. So we're talking about the collective wars of Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria. So it's cost us, you and me, taxpayers, more than $1.5 trillion since 9/11. And we still have U.S. military operations in Afghanistan, still in Syria, Iraq, and Homeland Security missions in the U.S. and Canada have accounted for $185 billion of that sum. Of the three current operations, Freedom Centennial in Afghanistan takes the lion's share of cost at $134 billion. That's followed by Noble Eagle in the United States and Canada at $227. I'd like to know what Noble Eagle is.
That's got to be, I got to believe that's border patrol, largely border patrols. You know, with either... support of Canadian forces as well as, you know, mounted up security at our northern and southern borders. That's interesting. We might have to look into that a little bit further because Mexico wasn't mentioned in this Department of Defense report.
You know, what's also interesting about that, here you have of the three current operations, Afghanistan, $134 billion. And in the U.S., for that Noble Eagle, is only $27 billion. You know, it should be the other way around. You know, we should be spending that money on our, you know, on our defense and our protections here in the United States. But I don't know. I just, you know, that's a big spread. That's a big spread. But anyway, according to the report, this money goes toward training, equipment, maintenance, food, clothing, medical services, and also pay for the troops.
Yeah, I got to believe that the figure mentioned about $1.5 trillion is actually a lot higher.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I want to look into that as the week goes on and see if we can't get some other figures, some clarifications on that. But, you know, we know that, you know, Secretary of Defense James Mattis is going to be heading to Afghanistan soon. He told reporters that traveling with him that he was hopeful peace talks with the Taliban there would signal an end to America's longest war. I mean, we've been in Afghanistan now for 17 years. Over the summer, top U.S. State Department officials met Taliban officials in Qatar to try and lay the groundwork for broader peace talks. Now, this would be Mattis's fourth time there since becoming defense secretary, and it's a part of a larger trip for him. Currently, as many listeners no doubt know, there are about 14,000 Americans in active duty in Afghanistan.
And I hear the music, and we'll be heading into a break. We'll be right back right after these few short messages. And thank you for listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to these radio programs live at 4 o'clock Eastern Time right from the website, or you can listen to the archives that are posted on a long-term basis. So, 800-375-4188. We were talking about Afghanistan and the different wars and the $1.5 trillion, and I agree. That number is much larger. Heck, most of the wars, they keep it all off budget. You don't even know what the numbers are and so forth. And
right.
I mean, there was, even during the financial crisis, there's money that gets shipped all over the place. So this kind of follows in line with that. We haven't heard much how this is going along with North Korea and their denuclearization. One minute it's on, the next minute it's off on. You know, again, it's kind of like, you know, whoever's flexing their muscles the strongest that day, it seems. But this, I guess, they held their 70th anniversary. They celebrated its 70th anniversary, and North Korea had a major military parade and revived its iconic mass games to celebrate its 70th anniversary. I guess that was yesterday, Dave.
It was.
You said you watched some of it.
I saw some video replays.
Did you?
Of it. It was quite spectacular in one sense, the non-military portion of it. Involving a lot of civilian people in the audience at the stadium that it was held at. It's very colorful. It painted a bright picture in an otherwise dark rogue state.
You know, but the emphasis, I guess, was on building up the economy, not so much on nuclear weapons. And they also rolled out some of its latest tanks and marched its best-trained goose-stepping units in the parade. It held back its most advanced missiles and devoted nearly half of the event to civilian efforts, as you had mentioned. It brought the mass games back into a five-year hiatus, and the games are a grand spectacle that features nearly 20,000 people flipping placards in unison. That in turn creates a huge mosaics of as thousands more perform gymnastics or dance in formation in the competition. Well, you know, I'm going to have to look up some of those, videos that are posted on the internet just to see it now. I saw they were going to have the parade, but I thought,
Yeah, I just assumed it was just going to be another, ostentatious display of their overstated military might. It turns out it was, it was akin to maybe a step below, but still a high level Olympic opening or closing ceremony. Not quite as elaborate again, but still impressive nevertheless. The strong emphasis on the economy there underscores the strategy that Kim has pursued since the beginning of this year. of putting economic development of North Korea front and center. Residents of the capital city, Pyongyang, trained for months, reportedly, for the anniversary and held up bouquets to spell out words and slogans that could be seen from the VIP viewing area, which, by the way, included the third highest ranking member of China's ruling Communist Party. That was a 2-hour event. Kim was seen strolling to the edge of the balcony. He waved. In fact, the two of them joined hands and waved to the crowd together to symbolize North Korea and China's traditionally close ties. Although some are thinking that, the absence of President Xi Jinping could indicate that Beijing still has some reservations about Kim's initiatives.
Well, we'll just have to see that how that plays out. And these performances are supposed to go on for a month.
Yeah, but
a month?
They're tickets that starting at $100, and they go up to over $800 a seat stadium. So it's
well,
not
people
cheap.
People can't be too poor.
Well, it raises the question of what segment of the North Korean population is getting to see this celebration, given the high cost of those tickets.
We're going to talk a little bit about Brexit, and I think this is important. Nobody else talks about it. And that's what we're all about, is talking about things nobody else talks about. I mean, we can talk to you all day long about, Twitter and Apple and, things that are plastered everywhere. But, if you want, something a little bit different, something that, will have an impact eventually, that'll affect us financially, we have the European Union, the Brexit negotiator, Michael Barnier, struck an optimistic tone. He says that perhaps a deal on the UK's orderly withdrawal from the bloc is possible within 8 weeks. Of course, their currency got a little bit stronger. He was at a conference in Slovenia and said that it was realistic and possible maybe to get an agreement by the start of November. And, that'll give time for the deal to be approved by the British and European Parliament. So they're exploring ways to make the section of the Brexit treaty on the Irish border more palatable to Britain. And Germany has privately agreed to accept a less detailed agreement of future UK and EU ties. What I'm thinking of, if this gets along, I mean, sure, they sure had their problems, but we all know that, there were a couple of other countries that were pretty close for their elections to where, they would have liked to have gone down this road too. So if they get this with the UK done fairly easy and, to where it doesn't, you might see some of these other countries like Italy and maybe even Greece and, some of the other ones say, well, it didn't hurt them that bad. So maybe we'll pull out too, but.
Yeah, clearly not out of the question, Melody. Once a deal is reached, it has to go to the UK Parliament for approval, and, lawmakers on both sides of that body are said to be preparing to sabotage the agreement. The exit from the EU is not a certainty anytime soon. Negotiations are continuing in Brussels this week. That's before the EU's 28 leaders discuss Brexit at a summit in Austria on September 20th. That'll be the first such discussion since June. More than anything, the leaders are expected to agree to hold a meeting in November, a special meeting, to sign off on a presumed deal on future relations between the EU and the UK. First there's going to be the so-called divorce deal, which needs to be settled in the next few months to ensure an orderly exit. And then the two sides are going to agree to an outline of what their future relationship should could and hopefully will look like. You know, once the UK has left, that agreement's going to be fleshed out in a detailed trade deal, and that's, you know, where the rubber is going to meet the road, Melody.
Absolutely. And you know, before we go in and talk about gold in Australia, there was a warning that came out from an Iranian military leader that he said that Iran is plotting strikes outside of its own borders and will even go beyond the seas to carry out attacks on those it perceives as enemies. Statements that further highlight Iran's clandestine operations inside the United States and in Europe. This was from the Washington Free Beacon report, and this was today. He says, the top Iranian military leader says that we warn the enemies of the Islamic Revolution. If they make an aggression against the Islamic Iran, we will chase and punish them not only outside the borders, but also beyond the seas. So, I don't know. Just kind of interesting, just another 2x4 that who knows what can actually catch a little bit of, you know, steam behind it. And
a hurricane in and of itself, Melody, all of this,
yeah.
this geopolitical volatility across the world, it's you know, just every bit is bad and concerning as you know, the winds that are going to be churning along with those 8, 10, 12 foot waves down our coast later in the week.
Mm. Well, you know, Australia, there's a small town. I'm going to destroy this name. Kambalda? I should say it in an Australian accent. Maybe that would...
Kambalda matey.
Hey, workers at it's a Beta Hunt mine, and they have brought more than $15 million worth of gold specimens to the surface in just 4 days. And the gold rocks were found below about 500 meters below the surface in an area just 3 meters wide and 3 meters high. The largest specimen weighs in at 90 kilograms and took 3 men to lift it onto the back of a vehicle. The quartz rock is covered in an estimated 2,300 ounces of gold worth about $3.8 million at today's gold price. So there was another specimen, 60 kilograms. That was estimated to contain about 1,600 ounces, or about $2.6 million in gold.
Yeah, and the whole scale of things, obviously, not a big deal, but, you know, over there, particularly for this small town, which is going through some, you know, really austere economic times, you know, it's a pretty big thing. I mean, the geologists... who works there at that mine said most mines around the world it's only possible to see gold through a magnifying glass. He said you might go, you know, your whole life and never see anything like this. He calls it a once in a lifetime discovery. You know, so it's just an interesting bit of news that we picked up. You know, as we were preparing for this day's show,
and you know, is it the irony of it is that the Beta Hunt has been mined for nickel, and of course, nickel is the key ingredient in stainless steel since I don't know the 70s, and so gold has always kind of just played a second fiddle, and so now there's, you know, paying attention, and it might no longer be that second fiddle, so. You know, we had a blog. We're going to talk a little bit about this. We're going to be heading into break. Well, we might be able to finish this up prior to the break. But you wrote on our Friday blog that the American corporations have $6.3 billion in debt.
In fact, I meant to say trillion.
Trillion.
Yeah, my bad.
$6 trillion in debt. In fact, it's been 6 months now since U.S. companies surpassed the record for total corporate debt of 45% of GDP. And of course, a pinnacle that was reached back in 2008 at the start of the Great Recession. So I'm going to ask you, Dave, tell us a little bit more about this corporate debt and how dangerous it is.
Well, Melody, while you know the U.S. stock market and its vulnerable bubble has been stealing most of gold and silver's attention this year, you know, a separate, just as dangerous bubble has been fizzling under the radar in the corporate bond market. You know, more and more analysts believe that this bond bubble is one of the main reasons why the stock market continues pushing to new highs, and that despite all the signs showing why it shouldn't be. And why it will also eventually be its undoing. You know, conventional wisdom is that this peak, you know, or corporate debt isn't like the last one. Interest rates stood at 5.25% going into the Great Recession 10 years ago, but they're just around 1.9% today. And the Fed has been raising them rates very slowly over a period of at least 3 years now. And that makes today's corporate debt load a lot easier to finance than it was in 2008, despite its bigger size. You know, between the lines of most mainstream media reports, things don't look so good. For one thing, the more leveraged companies are, the less resilient they are to shocks and turbulence in the economy, especially big ones.
Well, I had a question and it went out of my mind. So it was about the corporate debt. But it's Monday. I'm allowed to have that on a Monday.
That's right.
So anyway.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Not so much.
As well.
No, only Mondays. But you know, you mentioned that some of the features of this corporate debt load that makes it riskier than it may appear at first glance. So first, the portion of overall corporate debt that's considered high risk is larger now than it was at the last peak.
Well, that's true. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, you're talking about rates and, you know, we're about 1.9 right now. And, you know, we're looking to have a rate increase here, you know, in a couple of weeks. The Feds are going to meet and so forth. Your personal opinion, do you think they'll do the rate increase in a couple of weeks?
I do. I just have that much faith in their inability to put the brakes on, I think they're thinking, particularly with the last last wage report that showed wages up 2.9%, that combined with, you know, the upward revisions of second quarter growth, I don't think the Fed will be able to help itself. It will continue tightening, and I think it'll be up another 0.25%, and then we'll just wait and see what happens in December. Now, the big question about that, assuming, you know, that's a correct projection, is, you know, have the markets really built that September increase into the current pricing scenario? But, you know, you're right. You know, that corporate debt that's considered high risk is larger now than it was 10 years ago. And I guess we can come back to that after the break.
Absolutely. And that's in just a few short minutes, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every heart is
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold. gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. 800-375-4188, Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And we were talking about the Fed and their meeting that's coming up in the next week or so, a couple weeks, and whether they will raise rates or whether they won't. You believe that they will, based on all the data that has been given them and so forth. And certainly with Janet Yellen, that's all she was always about, was we gotta wait to see what the data is going to bring. So it was all about the data.
That's very good. I'm impressed.
Are you? And so with this, I don't know. He might pause with the pressure coming from the administration, and certainly the numbers that the government has supplied, the numbers are strong. If you don't dissect them, you know, you think everything is great. I said back in June there wouldn't be another one.
Well, I'll tell you what, I got to believe that, you know, leading up to the Fed's meeting, that there's some behind the scenes, I hesitate to call it lobbying, but essentially that's what it is. I'm sure that execs of some major corporations, particularly those with a lot of debt, are probably working to the extent they have connections, to sway the minds of some of the Fed governors. Since 2007, Melody, safe, highly rated corporate debt has fallen by about $1 trillion. You know, medium rated debt skyrocketed over the same period by almost $3 trillion. Now, the riskiest high yield debt remains lower than these two categories, but nevertheless has steadily grown between 2008 and now as well. More importantly, there's the highly risky leveraged loans. They're loans taken on by these big businesses that already have a lot of debt on their books. And they've doubled since 2010. Doubled. In fact, leveraged loans, when combined with high yield debt, make up 37% of all corporate debt. You know, meanwhile, available cash stockpiles are concentrated among the top 1% of companies, such as the Apples of the world. You know, and there's a wide swath of riskier companies who now have $1 in cash for every $8 in debt.
Wow.
That's a record low. And yes, worse than 2008.
But you know, the cash hoarders are at the top, skew the average cash to debt ratio for all companies. So it's making it look less risky than it is. And as you tell us, the problem's getting worse, a lot worse.
Well, you're absolutely right, Melody. You know, the riskier corporate loans are also being repackaged into, drumroll please, collateralized loan obligations.
Yeah, they wouldn't do that again.
They are, and they're selling them as lower risk instruments to investors. Now, granted, a lot of those investors are institutional, some higher end retail investors, but you know, and the problem isn't anywhere right now as severe as the repackaging of mortgage, you know, in the housing crisis back in 2007. But the similarities are obviously discomforting, and the practice is spreading. That's what's important. It's spreading again.
Take the regulations off, and they're going to do the same thing as what they did before. And I'm not a fan of regulations, don't get me wrong, but banks will do what banks and the investment and Wall Street will do what they've done before.
That's right. And, you know, that you hit it right on the head, Melody. There, all this is happening in the midst of a move towards partial deregulation of banks. You know, as we know, Congress recently approved the partial rollback of Dodd-Frank's strict financial rules, and now other regulators like, you know, the Fed and the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, you know, have loosened stress testing and capital requirements and other safeguards for banks. And, you know, all that does is increase the chance of that dreaded contagion, especially should a lot of companies go broke because of their debt.
But you know, Dave, the biggest insult to injury appears to be why this debt buildup is happening. Companies have told us they borrow mainly to finance expansions. Is this actually the case?
No. Well, I'm sorry. It's actually a good question. But you know, the numbers we're seeing, you know, says business investment in the economy fell. It fell over the same period that this borrowing increased. And investment now is at an all-time, not an all-time, but it's at real low levels, historically speaking. But even as the correlation between borrowing and investment broke down, the correlation between borrowing and payouts to shareholders has been running in the opposite direction. You know, a small reason is increased dividends. But the much bigger part is something we've been talking about and wrote about a couple of weeks ago, share buybacks, which were deregulated in 1980 and have now grown to untold proportions, approaching the $1 trillion mark on the you know, the back end of last December's corporate tax cuts. You know, in other words, Melody, most large corporations aren't just holding down workers' wages and their own investment to send more cash to shareholders. They're literally borrowing more to further feed their buyback frenzy. And that's making their financial positions even riskier in the process. So, you know, you have a 401k, pay close attention to it. Certainly make sure you have a good chunk of retirement assets in a precious metals IRA or just in the safe haven of gold and silver.
You know, we often talk about all the debt, historic high levels of debt, and these companies have been, you know, borrowing with the, you know, basically free money to buy back their shares. We talk about the different dominoes. What is the first domino in the effect? What would be the first domino that could set off this corporate debt bomb?
Well, certainly inflation. I mean, we don't know. I mean, it could be any number of factors. I mean, we talk about it a lot here on Financial Survival, inflation, interest rates. But, you know, a sudden spike in inflation could make the Fed overreact. You know, and that's something it's really good at, in my humble estimation, to raise interest rates faster and higher. Trade wars, another factor, like the ones looming. Or underway, you know, they can also cause inflationary prices by raising imports, the prices of imports. You know, of course, some geopolitical shockwave involving, you know, who knows who, Syria, Iran, North Korea, you name it, that could hit unexpectedly as well. You know, think about this. Even at its current pace, the Fed could get back to a 5% interest rate by around 2022. That's just 4 years, 4 years from now. And two fairly large batches of riskier corporate debt are coming due in 2021 and 2022, with another one 3 years later. for the most part, these companies aren't going to have the cash on hand to pay off those loans. They'll have to refinance at significantly higher rates. You know, you figure as much as 5% versus 1.5-2%, and less depending on when they borrowed. You know, if they miscalculate, that could set off a whole wave of corporate defaults.
Do you think this could be? Do we have to wait that long? But you know, when you think, when I look at 2022, it seems so far away. But yet, when you mention it's only 4 years, it's nothing.
Well, you know? It isn't.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, the whole realm of things. And if you think about it, then I mean, we're already in what's known as the longest, bull paper market now. That would be 4 additional years. And on top of, inflation rising, interest rates rising, all this corporate debt that's being leveraged, along with the tax cuts to go back into the hands of shareholders. And on top of that, the threat of any other either economic or, military conflict, it certainly is going to happen before 2022. And I think we start to see some corporate defaults. I mean, we're certainly seeing it with a number of large retailers. Now, those other factors are as much at work there, if not more so, than debt. But debt is certainly a factor with those companies, too. But, former Reagan budget guru David Stockman's been warning all this year, Melody, falling corporate bond prices and higher corporate bond yields are going to cause all the stock buybacks, increased levels of dividend payouts, and mergers and acquisitions to come to a screeching halt. And that is going to be a double whammy for the U.S. economy. You know, extreme consequences come from central bank meddling, and we're about to learn this lesson the hard way one more time.
Well, when we talk about, they've had easy money for so long, not easy money, free money,
yeah,
for so long. And, you know, it's just like a drug addict. You take away their drugs and what do you have? You have a very painful withdrawal period. So, it's not going to be any different.
No, it's not. No, it isn't. So, folks, the lesson here, be prepared. Buy more gold and silver, platinum and palladium. Do it now. Call Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188.
Did you want to comment any more on the monetary conditions, loose monetary conditions, or should we move on to something?
We can move on. I mean, it's up to you.
Let's talk about these stress tests on bank. Mm-hmm. Larry Summers, the former Treasury Secretary, called the results of the most recent Federal Reserve stress test of the largest banks comically absurd.
How do you really feel, Larry?
And called on regulators to boost capital at financial institutions. Summers made the comments after a presentation at the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston on the persistence of low interest rates in global economies. And the trend has been partially mitigated by fiscal programs, he said, such as Social Security, Medicare in the U.S., which tends to reduce people's inclination to save. But he continues, and he warned that the continually low interest rates, a feature of the 9-year-old U.S. expansion where the policy rate is only 1.75% to 2%, can produce asset bubbles.
Yeah, boy.
Bubbles,
yes. As we know, after the financial crisis of 10 years ago, Congress and regulators instituted a number of reforms to strengthen the financial system. We talked about Dodd-Frank just a minute ago. That was one of the major ones. The other is the stress test, where the capital of the banks that are considered the largest and systemically important banks, they're tested against these adverse economic scenarios that are designed by the Fed. You know, as we recently reported, the most recent stress test, you know, the worst scenario described a severe global recession with 10% unemployment, plunging housing prices, and a 65% fall in stock prices. Somewhat realistic indeed. The nation's largest bank holding companies are strongly capitalized and would be able to lend to households and businesses during a severe global recession. Those are the words of the Fed that it released in a June 28th press release. The Fed asserted that if every bank continued to pay out capital in the form of dividends and share buybacks, despite the severe scenario, that none would have any capital deficiency.
So again, just more 2x4s that are floating around out there. And I'm not a fan of Warren Buffett. You know, people say, oh, he's such a great investor and so forth. And, you know, he might have started out that way, but, you know, a lot of it is inside. You know, I mean, I could point time and time again, you know, where he walks into the White House and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, he was a big part of funding money to Bank of America. And then all of a sudden his trains, you know, was the ones that were, you know, transporting oil, you know, and the, you know, the Keystone oil pipeline never got done and so forth during the last administration. So I'm not a fan of Buffett. However, I do, once in a while, he does come up with something. And he did say something that was a little close to my heart. And he said, and we're talking, and this is the 10th anniversary of the Great Recession. It's when they said the Great Recession began. The 2008 financial crisis revealed just how vulnerable the U.S. economic machine is to any one part failing. This was according to Buffett. He says, 10 years ago this week, it wasn't just any part. The failure occurred in the over-leveraged banking system, which was drowning in toxic subprime mortgages that were packaged and then bought and sold over and over on Wall Street as mortgage-backed securities. The values of those mortgage-backed securities plummeted. Buffett said, we all learned in that particular panic is that we're all dominoes. How many times do I talk about dominoes on this program? And he says, we're all very close together, Dave. And he added that many Americans were left flat-footed when the crisis hit. And another crisis is coming, ladies and gentlemen. You should be prepared. Dave, we're prepared to end the program.
We hate to go.
We hate to go.
We are prepared to say goodbye.
Yes, we are. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. And we'll be returning. I'll be back tomorrow with Butch Paul. Dave, you'll be here Wednesday with Wendy Wilson. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.